Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Direction for Truth show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Sherry. I know I can see you, but now you'll be unmuted. There you go. Now we can.
Okay. Somebody was having trouble with their mic, so people didn't need to hear all that clacking around anyway. Thank you for joining us for Sound Health Options, a show where we try to bring you information so that you can make educated choices, because we believe that without choice, there can never be any change, and we want to provide you with an option or a choice that will make your life better. We're sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. Here in Ohio, I am running the WebEx, and out there in California, Richard is running Blog Talk Radio. Both are being recorded. Richard is recording audio, and I'm recording video. We'll be showing you some strange and unusual things tonight that's going to tick you off, and we hope that is the case. We have at the bottom of the hour joining us Alan Phillips, an attorney and a counselor of law, and he is very instrumental with the National Vaccine Information Center and their desire to stop mandatory vaccines, meaning you have to get a vaccine or you can't be seen in a hospital or a clinic or any place else. You go to jail, you get shot up. You go to your doctor, you get shot up or you can't be seen or they won't pay the doctor. So they're clamping down, and we are going to talk to you about where they get that authority to clamp down a bit. So we'll be talking to Alan at the bottom of the hour. Richard, do you have any announcements before we start?
I do, and before I make my primary announcement, I'll remind everybody for, depending upon where you are, whether you're on WebEx or you're on Blog Talk Radio, that I'm betting there's information here you're going to want to hear again. And the easiest thing to do is to go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then for today, click on Direction for Truth. And usually at the bottom of that page, there's a player that has the last five shows that we've done on Blog Talk Radio, the audio side, which is what I'm managing. And there is also an active chat over here, but in terms of the replay, mine is audio. And you'll see the player down there. And usually in about 20 to 30 minutes after the show, you'll see the addition of this show to that player by the show title. And, tell your friends. Follow. You know, I really would like to advocate for people who are listening, not necessarily at Blog Talk Radio, to go sign up at Blog Talk Radio for free, blogtalkradio.com. You can sign up for free. They don't spam you senseless. They don't resell your information, none of that. And then go look for Sherry Edwards, because that's an easy search term for the show, and follow that show, and you'll get announcements from us, pre-show announcements, and also if I do any, you know, instant chatting while things are going on, it'll be go directly to that. And plus, it's good for us to have more followers. It moves us up in the rankings at Blog Talk Radio, and that's always a good thing.
And there's probably 200 or 300 shows there. So you can put in a topic, and we've probably done a show about it if it deals with your health or your health rights or just your rights to be alive. So
right. And
what do you think?
I would say we're up in the almost 500 shows by now. We're pretty close. Upper fours, anyway. And, for instance, we'll have the attorney that's joining us later. We did a show with him last year, Alan J. Phillips, and so we did a full show, full hour with him last year on our Sunday show. So there's a lot of people in there. Now, if you'll put up that link that I sent you in Skype, which is just showing the EcoWatch page, I have a kind of a this is almost an editorial or a thing, I don't know quite what to call it, about just being aware about falling into media spin. And what I mean by that is I get a lot of emails from people ranting at me about Hillary's emails, and then I get another group of people who are ranting at me about what silly thing Trump did today. And I'm really advocating for, the reason I pull up the EcoWatch page, I'm really advocating for don't let the media direct your attention. Meaning just because on the news all they can talk about is Trump, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. We're still, you know, we really aren't talking about, like, for instance, a favorite gripe of mine, the three big pharma lobbyists per congressman. You don't hear that in the news. There's a lot of stuff going on. I think even on this home page down there toward the right for EcoWatch, they're talking about Kansas having, you know, bad earthquake issues due to fracking. We don't hear that on the news. We don't hear about Texas having a lot of earthquakes because of fracking issues. Flint, Michigan is evidently not worthy of being discussed, even though people are still drinking lead-filled water. This is all my opinion. So don't let the media direct your attention. You make a choice. Now, if you want to continue to rant about Hillary's emails or you want to continue to rant about Donald because you think that's what's important, okay. However, I'm going to be starting eliminating you from my list because I want the bigger picture of everything that we're talking about. There's a lot of things going on the planet that when all of the dust settles are going to be way more critical than who thinks they're going to be leading the country, because we still have a Congress that can't find their butt with both hands, in my opinion. So I'm advocating for, you know, watching the planet. Let's pay attention to, you know, glyphosate in our crops, fracking water on the food that we eat because they put the fracking water to the water table and now it's going, being discovered. Oh my, it's in the food we're eating. How weird. Okay, end of editorial rant.
I love the internet, Richard, because we get to post what's real and not have to just eat whatever's being handed to us.
Yeah.
And that leads me to something about tonight. It's a prelude to Alan coming on. This is an article that came up recently with Mike Adams, but it's been on National Vaccine Information Center for years. Children herded like cattle into Maryland courthouse for forced vaccinations as armed police and attack dogs stand guard. This really happened. In 2007, they had pictures of it. You'll hear Barbara Lowe Fisher talk about it in a few minutes too. But what is the worst part about this is, one, the school had lost a great deal of the records and made these kids get these vaccines again. And here is, he was some high mucky-muck, maybe he was the attorney general of the state, but whoever he was standing there making these children and parents walk through a courthouse with attack dogs and long barrel rifles pointed at them to get vaccines. And as it turns out, he had refused to vaccinate his own children. Now, this is what's happening in America today, and this is why we have to have our freedom back. If he, the person who can make the law and make you obey the law, if he is above the law, then why aren't we? Why do we, the peasants, so to speak, and that's how they're describing us, why do we have to have our children maimed and killed and sick, but he's exempt and he doesn't have to put his children through it? Think about this. 535 lawmakers, congresspeople, president, whatever, running millions of the rest of us. we need to take back our freedom about vaccines, about Monsanto, about everything. Think about our country being founded because people did not want to be terrorized. They did not want their taxes taxed to death with no representation. They didn't want their children taken away from them as, and I'm talking about the slaves here, as property of the master. That happened in other countries. It happened here. Some of that followed us through. But we were free in the beginning. And now we are right back to the place where somebody is making the laws and trying to trick us in thinking that we have to follow them. And here's one that happened in Ohio. There was a mother working here, and they said her son had to have some pneumococcal pneumonia before he could go back to school. And this is what they stated. Pursuant to Section 370113. Now, I looked up that section. That section is about hiring of direct care provider employees. They have said in Ohio now that teachers are direct care provider employees. Now, under that section, also 3313.671 of the Ohio Revised Code, says that this is where they get their privilege to carry out this section, this law. And what that particular revised code says is that they have the right to do anything for education and student education that they think will provide improvement. Neither of these laws give them any right to take away your health right, health privileges, health choices. And because they spout this Section 3701, blah, 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 and they decide that your teacher is a health care provider, nobody questions them. Is this stupid, crazy, or what? I was just appalled. And when you go through all of these revised codes, there's nothing to it. What do you think about that, Richard, with the mess you guys have in California?
I can't use any of the words I'd really like to with my, you know, yeah, crazy and I'll stick with crazy and stupid. It's just mind-boggling that, you know, our rights seem to be going under the rug, or I'm not sure where they're going, but they're certainly not available. It just blows my mind.
Well, one of the things that came up, and we're going to show several here, remember when we talked about, was it Jane Harper? She was the lead Gardasil developer, and we had examined Gardasil and had put out the frequencies to antidote Gardasil. She, the lead investigator, came out, Diane Harper, that's her name, and said, I have to tell the truth. I have to clear my conscience. Gardasil doesn't have anything to do with cancer. It has to do with cervical warts and should never have been given to anybody under 15. And they're giving this to 9-year-old boys. Now, cervical warts, the head of the uterus, boys don't even have a uterus. But in California, children are allowed to take these Gardasil shots. They scare them about getting cancer. And, oh, by the way, in some states, they give them an iPod if they'll take the shot. And this has become a tremendous problem with infertility. And California is fighting this. Texas had this as a law until it killed 18 girls and maimed over 100. And then they found out with Governor Perry, and I don't know which Democrat or Republic he is, they found that one of his people had been influenced by a lobbyist. And for this, our children, who don't matter to anybody who has power or wealth, it's our kids that get shot up. It's our kids that go to war. And there's many more things going on with this. There's two things here, and I don't know which one I want to play. This is a movie trailer. It's only 2 minutes long, but it's about vaccines, and it is excellent.
My life, I would do anything to get my life back to normal.
History teaches us how effective vaccines are.
Vaccines are the best choice for almost all children.
I don't think it's that black and white.
Vaccines in some way have been a victim of their own success.
The government, they're trying to protect society, but these motivations interfere with, you know, safety issues.
In the last three decades, the numbers of doses of vaccines have more than tripled.
We are seeing a rise in the number of children with disabilities.
What if these shots that are supposed to protect kids actually hurt your child?
After the shots, I started getting sick. I've had two strokes, partial paralysis, partial vision, and I'm having seizures.
I would have never dreamt that this was a side effect of a vaccine.
Many of these have the potential to be neurotoxic.
The research is incomplete, and the certainty is not scientific.
A number of prescription drugs that have been licensed as safe have been found to be unsafe.
For the social fabric, it is better to insist on vaccination than to allow free rein.
The people who are approving the vaccines are taking the word of the pharmaceutical company. The majority of vaccine research is paid for by the vaccine manufacturers themselves.
Only country other than New Zealand that allows advertising on TV for pharmaceutical drugs.
You can't sue the drug company that made the vaccine.
That's not science, that's politics.
Texas Governor Rick Perry has ordered that schoolgirls must get the Gardasil shot.
We can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way.
The only thing that we oppose is forced vaccination.
Sadly, some people don't do what's best for their children unless it's mandated.
We're not zealots. We're not some people that are looking for a conspiracy or a fight.
The vaccine program, it's one size fits all.
We worry about the future.
You could have 30, 40, 50 different vaccines mandated and absolutely no accountability. You have a prescription for disaster.
I have a child, and then I follow the rules, and I damage this child. That's hard for me to understand.
I just want everybody to lay down their arms and figure out what is making them so sick.
Show us the science and give us the choice.
I love that statement. Show us the science and give us a choice. LA Times. Oh, I don't want to continue reading this. Could California's proposed vaccine law be unconstitutional? Now, last Friday was the last day for, I think it was a federal movement, and we'll show you how to get involved with that still. But there is forced vaccinations, and we've had more shows about this, and there was one with Ron Paul, in which he stood on the Senate floor and said about hepatitis, that three children died of hepatitis. Then they mandated the shots, and 30-some children died of the shots. He was just shaking his head and saying the math doesn't even make sense, except if you put it in dollars and cents and into the pockets of the people who are making money by making you sick and keeping you as a customer. And for those of you who watched the film with us last Saturday, Gwen Olson was on, and she wrote the book about Big Pharma and how they try. She was one of their reps, and she quit. But because they tried to encourage her to get children on pharmaceutical drugs at a very early age, so they could have a customer, in quotes, customer for life. Get them when they're children. Same thing is going on in politics. there was a woman who they were thinking about, oh, I wish I could remember her name, thinking about running with Hillary. And if somebody knows it, please put it in the chat. But she was in Congress talking about how the herd modality, the herd mentality, that everybody needs to get these shots, and if some of you die, well, that's just the cost of making the herd better and stronger. I think this is going to be so stupid when we look back in 50 years, 100 years, and I've said this before on the show, this is like sacrificing virgins for a better crop. It's stupid when they say vaccines don't hurt anybody, but they have this great big fund for anybody that gets hurt, and they've paid out billions of dollars. Which is it? It doesn't hurt. It does hurt. They can't have it both ways. And they think we're that stupid. It's just incredible what's happening here. Supreme Court says mandatory vaccines don't violate children's constitutional rights. Where are they getting this? Don't you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? So they shoot you up in the hopes of making things better for everybody else, but some of the logic is just stupid. Kids get these measles shots and chickenpox shots, and we had cases here. Granddaughter got a chickenpox shot and ended up giving her grandmother shingles to the point where the grandmother ended up in the hospital. Because these people are fluffing off this virus. If you look at the good science, the science that has been proven, you can see that this is not a good thing. That each child needs to be evaluated before they get the shot. And we have that computer program ready. It's called PREVAC. And the kids that we have tested, if they don't have enough quercetin, which is a biflavonoid, they can't turn these live vaccines into something that will help immunize them. Vaccine laws. This is Barbara Lowe Fisher. We have about 8 minutes before our guest comes on. She talks about that Maryland situation. And it is just incredible what she says and who she is. And for those of you who have been with us before, remember that there's three people on the planet that we think are total truth tellers. And Barbara Lowe Fisher is one of them. Ron Paul is another, and Gwen Olson. So you can look on our site and see their vocal print and see how truthful they are. Do you have anything you want to add before I start this?
No, go ahead.
Richard, you can also read the transcript of this. I can tell you're disgusted already.
But National Vaccine Information Center that can be read on nvic.org. I remember the day in 2007 when I was standing in front of a Maryland County courthouse videotaping interviews with mothers and fathers lined up with children who had been thrown out of school for failing to show proof they had gotten chickenpox and hepatitis B shots. State public health officials were threatening the parents with fines and jail time. And suddenly, as we were talking, men in uniforms with guns and dogs emerged from the courthouse and headed toward us. In the pit of my stomach was a sickening feeling that people in countries throughout history have felt when the exercise of freedom of thought, speech, and conscience is met with a demonstration of police power wielded by agents of the state. Today, the American people are challenged, as they have never been before, to confront the expansion of government authority over our bodies and the bodies of our children, specifically the exercise of police power to take us into custody and isolate us without our consent whenever public health officials believe we are sick or could become sick. At stake is the preservation of human rights and cultural values that have been part of America since the Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights defined civil liberties two centuries ago. are public health officials getting ready to apprehend and quarantine you or your child if they believe you are or could become infected with measles or any other communicable disease they decide is a threat to the public health? Are they enlisting airline and other public transportation personnel to help them conduct a dragnet that will be easy for you to get caught up in when you travel? Once you're detained, can they hold you for 72 hours against your will until you agree to be vaccinated or they declare you are no longer a threat? Is this for real or not? You be the judge. During the last days of summer, while we were vacationing, shopping for school supplies, or in the case of Virginia families, while we were busy pleading with legislators to protect the medical and religious vaccine exemptions in state vaccine law, public health officials at the Centers for Disease Control were quietly publishing a very long notice of proposed rulemaking in the August 15, 2016 Federal Register to amend federal public health law. The part of the Public Health Service Act they want to strengthen is the part that gives them power under the U.S. Constitution to restrict the freedom of a person entering the U.S. or traveling between states if they believe the person is infected or could become infected with certain kinds of communicable diseases. You only have until October 14, 2016 to make a public comment to the CDC and contact your legislators in Congress. So please take this seriously, because what the CDC is proposing applies to all Americans who travel outside the country or between states, especially on commercial airlines and ships. In the future, it could extend to any form of transportation when you cross state lines, including by bus, train, or car. This Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NPRM, involves the participation of federally funded state health departments and state facilities, too, because the majority of police power to detain, isolate, and quarantine citizens in the U.S. belongs to the states. Many state legislatures, which have constitutional authority to pass laws controlling communicable diseases within state borders, voted to give state public health officials expanded police powers after September 11, 2001 by adopting the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act and the Turning Point Model State Public Health Act created at Georgetown University's Center for Law and the Public's Health and the CDC Collaborating Center Promoting Health Through Law. If this NPRM is implemented and the states follow suit, you and your children could be vulnerable to detention and quarantine if health officials decide you are or could become a transmitter of measles or other infections because, for example, your electronic medical records reveal you have not gotten every dose of every CDC-recommended vaccine. Let's not forget that no government agency, corporation, or person who creates, produces, sells, licenses, recommends, mandates, or administers a federally recommended vaccine to you or your child has any accountability or liability in a court of law in front of a jury of your peers if you become brain injured or die from vaccination. In a nutshell, the federal government is consolidating and strengthening power that was originally used to prevent persons with yellow fever and cholera from disembarking from ships entering U.S. ports in the 19th century and causing epidemics on land. For most of our country's history, the list of contagious diseases that allowed government health officials to detain and quarantine people without their informed consent was appropriately very short, confined to a few very serious contagious diseases, including yellow fever, smallpox, cholera, diphtheria, infectious tuberculosis, and the plague. It is worth noting that polio was never put on that list. In the past 15 years, CDC officials persuaded two presidents to issue executive orders in 2003, 2005, and 2014 to expand the isolate and quarantine list.
Not congressional, but executive orders. And we're going to come back to this after we talk to Alan, but I wanted to share a couple of things. CDC admits flu shots fail half the time. And I'm going to put this in the chat for people. And people, if people want to get in touch with us and they want these links, they will be on our site, Sound Health Options, mandatorymedicalcertification.com. Another one was mandatory vaccinations ruled unconstitutional by court. And we want to ask Attorney Phillips about that when he comes on. Another one, and this is just incredible. I couldn't believe this when a friend sent it to me and said, you need to tell people this. I'll read you just a few of the titles. Swine flu vax increased vaccine related to miscarriage, 6-4 in the New York Times, I guess. Study shows influenza vaccine causes spontaneous abortions and stillbirth. Class action suit on vaccine and Gardasil. Abortion stillbirth events from Gardasil far exceed other vaccines. H1N1 vaccine-related miscarriages. One of these talks about 2,500 women that were encouraged to get the flu shot, and over 2,000 of them spontaneously aborted. New adjuvant vaccines in pregnancy. What is known about their safety? Vaccine-regulated miscarriages. Vaccine-caused miscarriages and stillbirth. This is a list that goes on and on and on about some of the information. And remember what she said? Show us the science, but give us a choice. Okay, we're going to introduce our guest now if he's with us. Richard, are you here?
He is. He's here.
Okay, I've known Alan Phillips before he was ever an attorney, when he was a wonderful musician. I met him down in the mountains of Virginia. He's very dedicated to music and sound and its effect on living systems, but he's also very committed to helping people with their health rights. And we want to introduce him as an attorney and someone who is working very hard with Barbara Lowe Fisher, who you just heard. I think he has a state position in helping to turn around vaccine anti-rights, is the only way I can say it. So welcome, Alan Phillips, attorney for the people.
Sherry, it's a real pleasure and honor to be with you this evening. Richard, hello. It's just terrific to be here. I have very fond memories from the dark ages when we first met. I was so intrigued and impressed with your gifts and talents, and it was just terrific to have the opportunity to meet you many years ago, and quite wonderful in some respect to go full circle, because we went through many years without being in touch at all, and then came back together on a completely different issue, the vaccine issue. And it's just really wonderful to be able to be back in touch with you again, and a pleasure and honor to be with the two of you on the show this evening.
Well, I'm going to put up on our site NVIC, National Vaccine Information Center, and it's .org. You get strange things when you do .com. So where on here, or is it too late for us to write to our congressman and say, we don't want this?
Well, the CDC proposed rule, there's a formal process. When they want to put in a new rule, they have to publish it in the Federal Register. It's a formal legal publication, and give notice, and then people have a particular amount of time, a specific amount of time to comment, any kind of comment they want to make, and at least in theory, they're going to look at those comments and base what they do, factoring in those comments. And the time for comment closed on the 14th, so we're past that now. Now, Congress has oversight of, I believe, of the CDC, but I don't know the details about that. Of course, Congress can amend laws, and that could, if the CDC does go forward with this rule or some version of it, and it is a very serious overstep of authority, in my humble opinion. I really can't say it any better than what Barbara Lowe Fisher has already said. But I think I agree with her absolutely. It's an egregious violation of civil rights. It would be a real overstep of governmental authority, and it's just crazy. But if they were to go forward with this or some equivalent unacceptable version of it, Congress can always, if nothing else, and I don't know whether or not or what else Congress may be able to do, but if nothing else, they could pass laws restricting or drawing sharp lines. We have a hierarchy of law in this country, and at the top of the totem pole is the U.S. Constitution. Federal government and federal law is a higher legal authority than state law, for example, and statutes and legislative law at state and federal levels is a higher legal authority than the corresponding federal agency rules and regulations or state agency rules and regulations. So the CDC only has authority to the extent that Congress has delegated that authority. And there's a separate question here that if the rule goes through, is it overstepping the authority they've been delegated? And I don't have the answer to that question, but that's a question that would be worth looking into, because occasionally I've seen in the vaccine arena, state agencies will overstep their legal authority, either designing a form or implementing a rule or something where they just cross over constitutional lines, or in one way or another overstep the authority that they've been delegated by the state legislature. So you can call them on that when that happens, and that may be one avenue to fight this rule if it does go through. So we'll have to see, you know, what they do with it at this point.
There's tremendous cognitive dissonance about vaccines don't cause damage of any kind, yet they've paid out billions of dollars from this special fund for damages. How can they bring those two pieces together? And certainly from a perspective of a mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, that seems totally ridiculous that they think we're that stupid, that it doesn't cause damage, but we're willing to pay the damages it causes. How can you talk,
Sherry,
about that? I'm dumbfounded.
I would love to. If you had asked me in advance to send you a list of questions that I would love to talk about, this issue would have been one near the top of my list. There are literally subconscious psychological barriers that prevent people steeped in the pro-vaccine view from hearing or seeing even the clear objective evidence that we want to show to them. And this is particularly important, I think, as it concerns legislation, because it's in the legislatures primarily where rights are created or taken away. And the federal government doesn't have authority to mandate vaccines for state residents. So the primary battleground here, as I see it, is in the state legislatures. There are things that can go on at the federal level that are very important to the issue, so don't get me wrong. But primarily, I think the battleground is the state legislatures. And one of the things that I've been doing in recent months is doing conference calls with groups of legislative activists around the country. And I'm happy to say they've been very well received. And with respect to legislators in particular, but also anybody steeped in a pro-vaccine view generally that we're trying to reach with our information, we have mastered the first prerequisite pretty well, the know your topic prerequisite. We have to understand the science, the politics, the corruption, all the different aspects of the issue as best we can. And I think on the whole, the alternative community has done a pretty good job of that. Where we have fallen down is a second prerequisite that I think many people are completely unaware of, let alone taking steps to master. So I think this is something that the question you ask goes to the heart of what I see as a critical fundamental piece that needs to become part of the conversation, and really it hasn't been that I have seen much at all except in these calls that I'm having with activists. And the calls run a couple of hours. It's going to be hard to condense that into a couple of minutes. But basically what it boils down to, what we want people to know, turns out many times, and this is a generalization, there are you know, different styles and degrees and versions, and everybody's ultimately different or unique. But in general, what we want people to know is often very different from what they can hear. And I love to use an analogy here, and that's turtles, and the idea that the louder and harder you bang on a turtle's shell, the longer it's going to be before the turtle comes out of the shell. And what we've been doing, and very understandably, so this is, there's no put down here of anyone intended whatsoever, but what we've been doing when we figure out some of the problems, those of us who figure this out, is we want to scream it from the rooftops. And I certainly have been and deal with that impulse on a daily basis, frankly. But what we've been doing is just banging louder and louder and harder, and then we keep scratching our heads and asking, why isn't the turtle coming out of its shell? When you think of it in that way, you know, it makes sense. The door has to open from the inside. Those of us in the alternative health community and those who are aware of serious vaccine problems, one way or another, we figured it out for ourselves. Now, we look to outside sources and so forth, but ultimately, it was the door has to open from the inside. You can't bang it down from the outside. And so what we need to do, and what we've been doing with legislators, for example, and many times it's been with minimal effectiveness, and we've been trying to bring them up to speed on the issue, they can't hear that. It bounces off. They shut down really quick, many people. And what we need to do, I would submit, first of all, I think all we can do, but I would submit many times all we really need to do is exactly the opposite of try to bring people up to speed. It is only to get them started on their learning curve. And ultimately, however you do that, I think it boils down to that each of us, one at a time, has to realize we've been lied to. In one sense, it's really that simple, but that's a very profound thing for anybody who hasn't yet figured out that there is massive corruption within the healthcare industry, within other industries as well, within federal government in particular, and perhaps to a lesser degree, at least generally, but also at state government levels. And I'd love an opportunity, if you would allow me to speak to that for a couple of minutes, because I loved what Richard was saying earlier. He was saying, I'm going to paraphrase, and please, Richard, if I'm inaccurate, correct me, but in essence was saying, let's not be distracted by all the frivolous stuff going on in the mainstream media and even some of the alternative media for that matter. Let's look past the surface layer where everybody's just trying to manipulate us to get a vote one way or the other. Let's look at some of the really core, deeper issues here. And I would love to read a quote from I'm trying to see if I can find it here because I had pulled it up just a couple of minutes ago, from 1961 from President Kennedy. He was trying to expose and address a serious issue and problem. I pulled this up and I don't see it, but it will only take me a moment to pull it up again.
Well, as you're looking for it, I can see very clearly, and I think Richard will agree with me, that this issue with immunizations is not about health. It's about money. It's about putting money in the pockets of people who make these vaccines and with no liability whatsoever, because everybody who gets a shot pays a few pennies into this big, I don't know what they call it.
Well, fine.
Big
Watch
base
fund.
Of money. Glorified slush fund. Great.
Yeah.
So as that is going on, it can't be about health, because for every article that says vaccines are good, you can throw down two that says it isn't. So you could keep that going forever. And what is absolutely obvious is there is controversy. So when there's controversy, stop, recoup, rethink, and go from there. So, again, this is a money issue.
Yeah, well, Sherry, I see multiple layers, and to me the money issue is a real one, but it's a surface layer. I'm actually at the point in my own understanding and beliefs about the issue that the money is really just an implementation tool for other agendas. But let me hint at this. Well, I've got this quote now. This is from John Kennedy in 1961. He says, and I believe that he paid for his desire and attempt and efforts to deal with what I'm about to read in the quote. I think he paid for this with his life. He says, "We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed." Now, he refers to what I refer to with respect to how this would relate to the vaccine issue is that I see layers to the vaccine issue. And you follow the layers back far enough, and at some point you get to international bankers, people who have more money than is needed to buy anything that you can buy several times over. And there's a point at which the money game, after a certain level, becomes just a power game, and the world is their chessboard. And there are, according to many sources, a small number of families, a dozen or so, in the world today that control some 90 to 95% of the world's resources. They own the companies that own the companies that own the companies and so forth. And so it's an inherently complex problem, the vaccine problem, because there are multiple diseases, multiple vaccines. Each one has their own story or stories, and then there are these different layers to the agenda, the money layer. I used to laugh. In fact, for the first 15 of my now 22 ongoing years of research in the vaccine issue, I laughed any time somebody said anything about population control. And yet, as you were talking about now, there's information showing real adverse effects on birth and birth rates from the use of vaccines. The research of how to use vaccines to control birth has definitely been done. I saw a mainstream article several months ago talking about an overpopulation problem with deer in the northern part of New York State, and they were talking about using vaccines to deal with that, which I thought was rather odd. But there have been experiments, if that's what they are, done in third world countries where vaccines have been tested and they find ingredients that interfere with the ability to bring a child to term. So clearly, the research has been done, the vaccines have been tested, and one of the tip-offs, and I've seen this in the Philippines, in an African country, and then there was a country in Central South America, I don't remember specifically now, but where they are pushing vaccines on women of childbearing age, older female children and women, the tetanus vaccine on them, where in the particular indigenous cultures, tetanus is a much greater risk to the boys and men. And, you know, so any of this looked at closely will just not all add up. But money is clearly a huge part of it, and one of the disturbing realities that we have to understand. This is another one of the different psychology pieces. The pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in massive criminal behavior, and this is not a euphemism or an exaggeration. You can go to the federal government website, the Justice Department website, www.justice.gov, And I did a search on that website, and I found 37 combined criminal civil fines for pharmaceutical companies, 37 of them since 2001, that were greater than $100 million and as high as $3 billion. So criminal fines in the hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars, are common in this industry. And these next points are admittedly speculation, but I think you'll agree it's not, you know, coming out of left field. I can only see three reasons that this is occurring, and they've gotten worse in recent years. The large part of that, of those 37 fines, were in the second half of the last 15 or 16 years. So there would have to be a net profit or they wouldn't keep doing it. But speculative on my part, I don't have access to their spreadsheets. Obviously, and as a, I think, a factual matter, no one's going to jail. Now, you and I commit a $50 or $500 crime, we may serve time for it. These people commit $100 million, half a billion, or even billion-dollar crimes. There have been at least two or three times where criminal fines were as high as $1 billion. And let me clarify, you don't get a criminal fine unless you violate a criminal law and know that you were doing it when you did it. If you accidentally do something, you may still be liable for the harm you caused, but that's a civil fine or a civil court case. You don't get a criminal fine unless you did it on purpose. So criminal fines have been as high as $1 billion in this industry. So nobody goes to jail. There must be a net profit or they wouldn't keep doing it. And the people doing this, and here's the really the critical piece that's hard for many of us to wrap our minds around. The people doing this sleep just as well at night as you and I do, knowing that they are causing avoidable death and disability, but they're not going to personally be held accountable for it, so they can do that. As a purely statistical matter, at least according to some sources, we have 4 to 8% of our population are psychopathic. When I use the word psychopath or sociopath in connection with these kinds of problems, I'm not diagnosing anyone. I'm referring to the concept of lack of a conscience. Someone who literally lacks a conscience or has figured out how to suppress their conscience, they can look at numbers on a spreadsheet and they can set aside the deaths and disabilities that will result from that because they're not going to be held accountable. And if they get caught, okay, we pay a fine, but, you know, $5 billion profit is better than none. There's just something about money when it reaches the level of $1 billion, let's say, or some huge amount, that it takes on a life of its own and it just rolls over everything in its path. So we need to understand that there are people on the planet who do make decisions like this. You know, one of the things you hear when you try to tell people their problem with vaccines, they say, nobody would do that. Nobody's smart enough to be a pharmaceutical executive would do that. Well, there's no correlation between psychopathy and intellect, academic intelligence. There are psychopaths who are stupid and psychopaths who are brilliant. And ironically, those personalities will rise up the corporate or government ladders faster than other people with a conscience because they'll do things that a person with a conscience wouldn't do. And as long as they don't go too far out on a limb and undermine their entire career, they'll move up the ladder quicker. Some people say they make particularly good CEOs because they can really focus in on the bottom line and disregard everything else and maximize profits and up to the point of crossing moral and ethical or at least legal boundaries. Maybe that's what in general concept anyway, we want our CEOs to do, especially if we have stock in the company. But we've gotten out of control, bottom line. This has gotten out of control. Capitalism has some serious flaws, and one of the flaws is that it pushes people up against moral, ethical, and legal boundaries, and then they have to make a decision. Am I going to cross that line or not? And there are some people who can evaluate that question based on what's going to maximize the dollars no matter what, as long as nobody's personally held accountable for it. And that means violating criminal laws up to the billion-dollar level so far.
Well, I see on NVIC's site, and I put the link in our chat here, that there's three things that you want us, the people, to ask our legislatures, people, to consider. One, the proposed rule is a violation of civil liberties. The proposed rule is a clear case of federal government overreach. proposed rule is a very subjective and reasonably broad definition of illness. How can we get this information to our legislators? And to, I think one of the things you really brought up strong is we the people must educate our leaders who are being spun by lobbyists and money mongers.
Yes, we have to, the people who are the lawmakers, they're the ones who have enormous capability to fix some of these problems or to take huge steps in that direction. So we have to become legislatively active. We have to educate our legislators. We have to understand and explore the question of what is the most effective way to communicate to them. What do we say and how do we say it? But ultimately, the bottom line is we've got to bring them up to speed. We have to help them understand that there is corruption here. And this is such a difficult issue, but I'm going to tie in vaccines here to the election in a way. I have been one to avoid politics and election talk all my life, and George Carlin summed it up really well talking about presidential elections. He says, different horses, same owner. And ever since Kennedy, I think that's the situation we've had. It didn't really matter who you voted for, because the only way you get to the point where you're one of the two final candidates is because the people with money decide they like you and they want you there. So, you know, they support both sides, and it doesn't matter who wins. If it matters, and I can't say for sure if it does this time or not, but if it matters, there's one candidate. You know, both of them have strong criticisms that apply, but one of them, if either of them is from the outside, it's one in particular. And if the inside corruption can be fixed, it's going to have to be somebody from the outside, not somebody who's been part of the system for many, many years and decades. And so that's my 2 cents worth on that. But it goes further, because with regard to the vaccine issue specifically, Hillary has tweeted, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact thing, but something like, you know, the earth is round and vaccines are wonderful. Anybody, the implication being anybody who says otherwise is an idiot. Dr. Andrew Wakefield has spoken personally with Donald Trump, and he says Trump gets it about the CDC corruption. Now, there's this movie Vaxxed going around the country where they have documented, and Congressman Bill Posey in Florida has thousands of pages of documents that he got from a CDC whistleblower that proves that vaccines do cause autism, and that shows that the CDC and top-level officials at the CDC deliberately covered that up. They got together and destroyed the data. Well, one of those people had a conscience and kept copies of the documents. And now they're in the hands of a federal congressman. But he's had them for 2 years now. He's been asking Congress to investigate. Congress is not investigating. So there is a serious corruption problem at the top. Serious corruption problem. You know, can Trump fix that? I have no idea. I'm scared to death of the idea of Trump becoming our president, but I'm a lot more scared of somebody who has established herself as calling anybody who questions vaccines, you know, somebody who needs to wear their tinfoil hat, in words that might as well have been, you know, those words, and another one who understands, you know, that there's corruption on the issue. The fact that they're not investigating is a serious red flag that we no longer have a democratic republic, because Congress should be jumping all over this. It should be front page news all over the country, but nobody's talking about it in any mainstream media sense. So there's serious, serious problems here. If it doesn't matter, if both candidates are, and some people are saying this in the alternative news, that both candidates are, you know, cabal picks, and once again, it doesn't matter who wins, or, you know, either way, they're controlled and so forth. If it doesn't matter, then a vote for Trump isn't going to hurt anything. But if it does matter, if he really is from the outside, and he really does apparently get it about the vaccine issue, you know, one alternative source says there's lots of, you know, stories in the alternative health, and people guess and speculate. Who knows what's true? But one source said that if Trump wins, there's going to be mass arrests shortly after he enters office. And boy, wouldn't that be nice if somebody got in there who really was able and willing to take on this corruption and try to get through to it. I watched the YouTube videos of congressmen questioning the FBI director, and they asked him, did Hillary lie on this? Yes. Did she lie on this? Yes. Did she lie on this? Yes. That's a felony, lying to Congress. you and I did that, we'd be in jail for it. So we can,
there's several,
you know,
people in jail for it.
Yeah,
there's
so
several
why,
people in jail for it already, yes.
So I don't even necessarily point to Hillary personally here as much as I'm just saying, if there's a person who can run for president and be above the law, what does that say about the system? Some people have said that most people in the FBI think she should be prosecuted, but it only takes one person, the director, to decide whether or not she's prosecuted. And a congressman is interviewing this director and points out that in order to say we're not going to prosecute, he had to make up a new element that's not in the law. And the congressman said, you've not only made up a new element, but she meets this element anyway, and you're saying she doesn't, you know, fit this element, and that's why you're not prosecuting. For purposes of this moment, it's not even about Hillary. It's about the larger system. How is it that we can have a system where some people are above the law? You know, it's like, what was that book years ago, George Orwell's book, Animal Farm? Everybody is equal, but some people are more equal than others.
Yes, I love that book, and I think it's very appropriate for today's politicians. But if you go back and look why America was established, because we wanted freedom, we wanted out from under the tyranny and the taxes without representation, and even with slavery of slave owners taking our children as their property, we are back to that state again of the state of the government thinking they own our children and they can do whatever they want with them. We have custodial rights to keep in our house sometimes, but they are claiming that they own them and they can do anything with them. I would like to see somebody say, I will set America free, because that's where we really need to go and get out from under the same old situation we were in hundreds of years ago with England and the overlords and that kind of garbage. Think about it. We are in that same system today. Yes, it's modernized, but the people at the top are running and abusing the people at the bottom.
I think it's really that simple. And there are many people in the middle who are just following orders. They don't know any better, and we want to wake them up. But I think most people really are people of integrity, people who just want to put in a good day's work and get a good day's pay and go home and so forth. So I don't think there's this broad conspiracy throughout the healthcare system or the pharmaceutical industry, but I believe absolutely there is a conspiracy among a relatively small number of key decision makers. And if you control those decision makers, then you do control everybody else. And we do have situations. Now, sometimes people on these issues, Sherry, they will step over legal lines, either deliberately or inadvertently. They're overly aggressive because they have bought into the story that if you don't get your vaccines, you're going to kill everybody and so forth. And so a lot of these people, even the ones who are being overly aggressive, a lot of them, their heart's in the right place. They want to do the right thing and believe they're doing the right thing. So it's really, really difficult in that respect, because some of them do have good intentions, even if they're doing ultimately bad things. And sometimes, either deliberately or unintentionally, they step over legal lines. And unfortunately, our legal system doesn't prevent anybody from breaking the law. What it does is provide a system where if somebody does break the law, and if you have enough money to hire an attorney, unfortunately, there's a huge barrier there to justice. But the system is designed, theoretically, for us to be able to use it to correct a wrong, right a wrong, or fix a problem. Sometimes the system works and sometimes it doesn't.
Alan, in your opinion, is there something we can do as individuals to have a kind of influence or effect, or I don't know what I want to call it, about this, speaking of, who's in control of issues, the three pharmaceutical lobbyists per congressman kind of thing, speaking of, who's controlling issues,
Is there
a legal thing there? Is there any effect we can have, do you think?
I hear your question, and there, to me, the as you're asking it, there are different pieces to the answer. But let me start first with kind of a broad overview. The vaccine issue ultimately, of course, is a science question or medical science question. Are they safe? Are they effective? Are there other things we can do? Do we need them? And so forth. These are all questions that ultimately have scientific answers. The way we interface with this issue, though, on a day-to-day level, is really a legal matter. Any time a vaccine is required, there's either a law that says you can opt out or there isn't. So we have to deal with it on that level. But we got to where we are today because of systemic corruption. There are many wonderful people in the healthcare system, but as a whole, a totality, it's a severely corrupt and dysfunctional system. So the question is, in a broader sense, how do we fix the disruption? Because healthcare policy and law is driven by mainstream medicine, whether we like it or not, and mainstream medicine is corrupt. So even when the legislatures and the courts work the way they're supposed to, and that's not a given 100% of the time in today's world by any means, but even when they do work the way they're supposed to, if they're starting with corrupt mainstream medicine, there's a really good chance they're going to end up with corrupt healthcare policies and laws, and we have lots of corrupt healthcare policies and laws. Vaccines is a classic example of that. So the long-term solution is that we have to document and expose the corruption in whatever way it takes to force mainstream medicine to reform. So metaphorically, we've got to put a spotlight on the corruption. You know, I have this sort of simple theory that even a bad person will do the right thing if there's a spotlight on them. Now, what does that mean in the real world? That's an inherently complex question. But metaphorically, we've got to all become a spotlight so that collectively there are no more shadows left for anybody to hide in. So what does that mean for each of us as individuals? Well, there's a challenge for each of us to figure that out. And we're on the verge here, humanity is on the verge of a profound shift, evolutionarily, I think, on a spiritual level. And part of this on a practical level is a 180-degree shift from relying on external people and sources and things to tell us what to do and fix everything for us to trusting our own, getting in touch with and trusting our own internal guidance. And yes, we need to look to outside sources of information. But as long as we're sitting around waiting for somebody else to fix everything, then yeah, somebody's going to fix it. And the people who are going to fix it are the ones who are in control and have the money, and they're going to do the things that they want to do to fix it for their personal agendas. And the rest of us, be damned, there's too many people on the planet anyway, so who cares if some of them, you know, die, and we want as many of them. You know, the big money with vaccines is not actually in selling the vaccines. It's in the lifelong customers from the chronic diseases that vaccines create, and you touched on that earlier in your show. It's a really, I think, profound point. Vaccines is a rapidly growing, multi-billion-dollar international industry, and yet that's the small potatoes compared to the lifelong customers with chronic diseases that vaccines cause. So, boy, it's just beyond my ability to grasp. And I was really good in math and science in high school and college, but I can't, you know, I don't know what $1 billion is really in practical terms. And we're talking billions and billions, multi-billions. You know, it's just mind-boggling, the different parts and pieces to this. So there's sort of the abstract level. We've got to expose the corruption, document and expose the corruption in a way that ultimately compels mainstream medicine to reform, because then the courts and legislatures can come up with sane, rational policies that have integrity and so forth. So that, on an abstract level, is what we're dealing with. What can we do in practical, real-world, day-to-day terms? Well, I think, again, one of the primary battlegrounds is the state legislature, so we need to become legislatively active. As far as I can tell, Congress is bought and paid for, you know, the federal government. I still send the emails when I get the email saying, tell your congressman about this, that, or the other, and there's a problem. I would never not participate, because you never know, you know, what can make the difference. But I'm kind of skeptical about what letters and emails can do unless they come in large quantities, and then they will get a state or federal representative's attention. But I would send one any day before doing nothing. But
Alan,
we need
to. It's been an incredible show, but we are totally out of time. Richard needs to go. We need to get off Blog Talk Radio. But there is something that you brought up that after the show closes, I'm going to play for everybody else, and it's something that's on Barbara Lo Fisher's, the NVIC.org, turning vaccine exemptions into class warfare. And there's so many good points in that. It's 8 minutes long. I hope most of you stay so that you can listen to that or at least go to her site, and I will put this in the chat for everybody. It's 8 minutes long. So, Richard, thank you. Thank you, listening audience. I hope that you pass this on to everybody you know. Incredible show, one of the best shows we've done in a long, long time, about your rights as a sovereign person to take your own health rights into your own hands and have dominion over who you are.
And might I ask, Alan, before we close here, Alan, where can people find more out about you? Because you have a site really dedicated to talking about this very issue. Where do people follow you?
Yeah, I'm the only attorney in the country whose practice is focused on vaccine exemptions and waivers, so I really have some unique perspectives on that particular piece of the larger vaccine puzzle. And contact information is on my website at vaccinerights.com.
Great. We must stop, although we could go on for so long. So I think we'll have to have you. We haven't had you on a Sunday in a while. We'll have to have you back pretty soon because we could both be like wild dogs barking, that's for sure.
Yeah, we certainly could.
Thanks, everybody over here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to shut this side down, and then on the WebEx side, you guys will get to watch that 8-minute movie. And thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Sunday. Thanks again, Alan.
You're welcome. Take care.